captured by Strigoi in Russia, and then lived on the run as a wanted murderess. That didn't sound charmed at all.
And yet, here you are, triumphant after it all. You survived death and freed yourself from the bond. Lissa's queen, you got the guy and you're happily ever after.
I turned my back to him and stalked away. Adrian, what do you want me to say? I can apologize forever, but there's nothing else I can do here. I never wanted to hurt you. I can't say that enough, but the rest? Do you really expect me to be sad about everything else having worked out? Should I wish I was still accused of murder?
No, he said. I don't want you to suffer. Much. But the next time you're in bed with Belikov or whatever, stop a moment and remember that not everyone made out as well as you did.
I turned back to face him. Adrian, I never...
Not just me, little Dompier,
he added quietly.
There's been a lot of collateral damage along the way while you battled against the world. I was a victim, obviously. But what about Jill? What happens to her now that you've abandoned her to the royal wolves? And Eddie? Have you thought about him? And where's your alchemist?
Every word he slung at me now was an arrow, piercing my heart more than the bullets had. The fact that he'd referred to Jill by her name instead of jailbait carried an extra hurt. I was already toting plenty of guilt about her, but the others? Well, they were a mystery. I'd heard rumors about Eddie but hadn't seen him since my return. He was clear of James's death, but killing a Maroi, when others still thought he might have been brought in alive, carried a heavy stigma. Eddie's previous insubordination, thanks to me, also damned him, even if it had all been for the greater good. As queen, Lissa could only do so much. The guardians served the Maroi, but it was customary for the Maroi to step back and let the guardians manage their own people. Eddie wasn't being dismissed or imprisoned. But what assignment would they give him? Hard to say. Sydney, she was an even greater mystery. Where's your alchemist? The goings-on of that group were beyond me, beyond my world. I remembered her face that last time I'd seen her, back in the hotel, strong but sad. I knew she and the other alchemists had been released since then, but her expression had said she wasn't out of trouble yet. And Viktor Dashkov? Where did he fit in? I wasn't sure. Evil or not, he was still someone who'd suffered as a result of my actions, and the events surrounding his death would stay with me forever. Collateral damage. I'd brought down a lot of people with me, intentionally or no, but as Adrian's words continued sinking into me, one of them suddenly gave me pause. Victim, I said slowly. That's the difference between you and me.
Huh?
He'd been watching me closely while I'd considered the fates of my friends and was caught off guard now.
What are you talking about?
You said you were a victim. That's why ultimately you and I aren't matched for each other. In spite of everything that's happened, I've never thought of myself that way. Being a victim means you're powerless, that you won't take action. Always I've done something to fight for myself, for others, no matter what. I'd never seen such outrage on Adrian's face.
That's what you think of me? That I'm lazy, powerless?
Not exactly, but I had a feeling that after this conversation, he would run off to the comfort of his cigarettes and alcohol and maybe whatever female company he could find. No, I said. I think you're amazing. I think you're strong. But I don't think you've realized it yet, or learned how to use any of that. And I wanted to add I wasn't the person who could inspire that in him.
This, he said, moving toward the door, was the last thing I expected. You destroy my life, and then feed me inspirational philosophy.
I felt horrible, and it was one of those moments where I wished my mouth wouldn't just blurt out the first thing on my mind. I'd learned a lot of control, but not quite enough. I'm just telling you the truth. You're better than this, better than whatever it is you're going to do now. Adrian rested his hand on the doorknob and gave me a rueful look.
Rose, I'm an addict with no work ethic who's likely going to go insane. I'm not like you. I'm not a superhero.
Not yet, I said. He scoffed, shook his head, and opened the door. Just before leaving, he gave me one more backward glance.
The contract's null and void, by the way.
I felt like I'd been slapped in the face. And in one of those rare moments, Rose Hathaway was rendered speechless. I had no witty quips, no elaborate explanations, and no profound insight. Adrian left, and I wondered if I'd ever see him again. Chapter 36. I'd often dreamed about waking up with Dimitri, waking up in a way that was ordinary, sweet. Not because we were hastily trying to catch sleep before fighting our next foe. Not because we were recovering from sex we had to hide, sex laden with baggage and myriad complications. I just wanted to wake up together, in his arms, and have it be a good morning. Today was that day. How long have you been awake? I asked drowsily. My head was on his chest, and I was wrapped against him as best as I could manage. My wounds were healing rapidly, but still had to be babied. We'd found a few creative workarounds last night. Sunlight now spilled in through the windows, filling my bedroom with gold. He was watching me in that quiet, solemn way of his, with those dark eyes that were so easy to get lost in.
A little while, he admitted,
lifting his gaze to the sunlight-filled window.
I think I'm still on a human schedule. Either that, or my body just wants to be up when the sun is. Seeing it is still amazing to me.
I stifled a yawn.
You should have gotten up.
I didn't want to disturb you.
I ran my fingers over his chest, sighing in contentment. This is perfection, I said. Is every day going to be like this? Dimitri rested his hand on my cheek and then moved down, tipping my chin up.
Not every day, but most days.
Our lips met, and the warmth and light in the room paled compared to what burned inside me. I was wrong, I murmured when we finally broke the long, languid kiss. This is perfection. He smiled, something he was doing an awful lot of lately. I loved it. Things would probably change once we were back out in the world. Even if we were together now, Dimitri's guardian side would always be there, ready and watchful. But not right now. Not in this moment.
What's the matter?
He asked me. With a start, I realized I'd begun to frown. I tried to relax my face. Unbidden, Adrian's words had come back to me, that the next time I was in bed with Dimitri, I should think about others who weren't so lucky. Do you think I ruin lives? I asked.
What? Of course not.
The smile changed to shock.
Where would you get that idea?
I shrugged. There are just a lot of people whose lives are still kind of a mess. My friends, I mean.
True, he said, and let me guess, you want to fix everyone's problems.
I didn't answer. Dimitri kissed me again.
Rosa, he said, it's normal to want to help the people you love, but you can't fix everything.
It's what I do, I countered, feeling a little petulant. I protect people.
I know, and that's one of the reasons I love you. But for now, you only have to worry about protecting one person.
Lisa.
I stretched out against him, noticing my injuries really were constantly improving. My body would be able to do all sorts of things soon. I suppose that means we can't stay in bed all day? I asked hopefully.
Afraid not,
he said, lightly running his fingertips along the curve of my hip. He never seemed to get tired of studying my body.
They come first.
I brought my mouth back toward his. But not for a little while.
No,
he agreed. His hand slid up to the back of my neck, tangling in my hair as he drew me closer.
Not for a little while.
I had never attended a royal coronation before, and honestly, I hoped I never would again. I only wanted there to be this one queen ruling in my lifetime. Eerily, the coronation was kind of a reverse of Tatiana's funeral. What was the old saying? The queen is dead, long live the queen. Custom dictated the monarch-to-be spend the first part of the coronation day at the church, presumably to pray for guidance, strength, and all that spiritual stuff. I wasn't sure what custom did in the case of atheist monarchs. Probably they faked it. With Lissa, who was fairly devout, I knew that wasn't a problem and that she was probably legitimately praying she'd do a good job as queen. After the vigil, Lissa and a huge procession walked back across court to the palace building where the crowning took place. Representatives from all the royal families joined her, along with musicians who were playing much more cheerful tunes than for Tatiana's procession. Lissa's guardians, she had a fleet now, walked with her. I was among them, wearing my finest black and white, including the red collar marking me as a royal guardian. Here, at least, was a notable difference from the funeral. Tatiana had been dead. Her guardians were for show. Lissa was very much alive. And even if she'd won the council's vote, she still had enemies. My colleagues and I were on high alert. Not that you'd think we needed it. Not with the way the onlookers cheered. All those who had camped out during the trials and election had stayed for this fanfare, and more had shown up still. I wasn't sure when there'd ever been this many Moroi in one place. After the long and winding walk, Lissa made it to the palace building and then waited in a small antechamber adjacent to what served as the Moroi throne room. The throne room was almost never used for modern business, but every once in a while, like a new queen being sworn in, the Moroi liked to pull out ancient traditions. The room was small and couldn't hold all the witnesses from outside. It couldn't even hold the entire procession. But the council and highest-ranking royal members were there, along with some select invitees of Lissa's. I stood off to the side, watching the glamour unfold. Lissa hadn't made her grand entrance yet, so there was a low hum of conversation. The room was all green and gold, having been given a thorough and fast remodel in the last few days, since custom dictated the ruling family's colors dominate the throne room. The throne itself sat high against the far wall, accessible by steps. Carved of wood I could no longer identify, I knew the throne had been carried around the world by Moroi monarchs for centuries. People were lining up in carefully assigned positions, preparing for when Lissa would enter last. I was studying one of the new chandeliers, admiring how realistic the candles in it looked. I knew they were electric, but the craftsmen had done amazing work. Technology masked in old-world glory, just as the Moroi liked. A small nudge drew my attention away. "Well, well, well," I said. "If it isn't the people responsible for unleashing Rose Hathaway on the world, you've got a lot to answer for." My parents stood before me in their typical and wildly contrasting clothing. My mom wore the same guardian outfit I did, a white shirt with black slacks and jacket. Abe was, well, Abe. He had on a black pinstripe suit with a black dress shirt underneath. Splashed against the darkness was a bright lemon-yellow paisley tie. A matching handkerchief peeped out of one of the jacket's pockets, along with his gold earrings and chains. He also wore a black fedora, which was a new addition to his outlandish wardrobe. I guess he wanted to go all out for an event like this, and at least it wasn't a pirate hat.
"Don't blame us," said my mother. "We didn't blow up half of court, steal a dozen cars, call out a murderer in the middle of a crowd, or get our teenage friend crowned queen."
"Actually," said Abe, "I did blow up half of court."
My mom ignored him, her expression softening as she studied me with her guardian eyes.
"Seriously, how are you feeling?"
I'd seen them only briefly in the days since waking up, just enough for us all to check in on each other.
"You're doing an awful lot of standing today, and I've already told Hans not to put you on active duty for a while."
It was one of the most motherly things I'd ever heard her say.
I'm fine, a lot better. I can go on active duty right now.
"You will do no such thing,"
she said in exactly the tone she'd use giving orders to a troop of guardians.
"Stop coddling her, Janine."
"I'm not coddling her. I'm looking out for her. You're spoiling her."
I looked back and forth at them in amazement. I didn't know if I was witnessing a fight or foreplay. I wasn't thrilled about either option.
Okay, just back off, you guys. I survived, right? That's what counts."
"It is," said Abe.
He suddenly seemed very fatherly, which weirded me out even more than my mom's behavior.
"And despite the property damage and string of broken laws left in your wake, I'm proud of you."
I suspected that secretly he was proud of me because of those things. My cynical interior commentary was brought to a halt when my mom concurred.
"I'm proud, too. Your methods were not ideal, but you did a great thing. Great things, really. Finding both the murderer and Jill."
I noticed her careful wording of the murderer. I think it was still hard for all of us to accept the truth about Tasha.
"A lot will change because of Jill."
All of us looked over at the foot of the throne. Ekaterina stood on one side, ready with the Book of Royal Vows. The other side was where members of the monarch's family stood, but only one lone person was there. Jill. Someone had done a great job of cleaning her up. Her curly hair had been elaborately styled and pinned, and she wore a knee-length sheath dress with a wide portrait-style collar, just barely showing off her shoulders. The dress's cut made the most of her lanky figure, and the dark green satin looked great with her features. She was standing straight, chin high, but there was anxiety all over her, made more obvious by her being so conspicuously alone. I glanced back at Abe, who met my eyes expectantly. I had a lot of questions for him, and he was one of the few who might tell me the truth. The decision was, which question to ask? It was like having a genie. I'd only get so many wishes.
"What will happen to Jill?"
I asked at last.
"Will she just go back to school? Are they going to train her to be a princess?"
Lyssa couldn't be both princess and queen, so her old title went to the next oldest member of her family. Abe didn't answer for several moments.
"Until Lyssa can get the law changed, and hopefully she will. Jill is all that allows her to keep her throne. If something happens to Jill, Lyssa will no longer be queen. So, what would you do?"
"I'd keep her safe."
"Then you have your answer."
"It's kind of a broad one," I said. "Safe means a lot of things."
"Ibrahim," warned my mother. "Enough, this isn't the time or place."
Abe held my gaze a bit longer and then broke into an easy smile.
Of course, this is a family gathering, a celebration. And look, here's our newest member."
Dimitri had joined us and wore black and white like my mother and me. He stood beside me conspicuously, not touching.
"Mr. Mazur."
he said formally, nodding a greeting to both of them.
Guardian Hathaway.
Dimitri was 7 years older than me, but right then, facing my parents, he looked like he was 16 and about to pick me up for a date.
Ah, Belikov,
said Abe, shaking Dimitri's hand.
I'd been hoping we'd run into each other. I'd really like to get to know you better. Maybe we can set aside some time to talk, learn more about life, love, etc. Do you like to hunt? You seem like a hunting man. That's what we should do sometime. I know a great spot in the woods, far, far away. We could make a day of it. I've certainly got a lot of questions I'd like to ask you. A lot of things I'd like to tell you, too.
I shot a panicked look at my mother, silently begging her to stop this. Abe had spent a good deal of time talking to Adrian when we dated, explaining in vivid and gruesome detail exactly how Abe expected his daughter to be treated. I did not want Abe taking Dimitri off alone into the wilderness, especially if firearms were involved.
Actually, said my mom casually, I'd like to come along. I also have a number of questions, especially about when you two were back at St. Vladimir's.
Don't you guys have somewhere to be? I asked hastily. We're about to start. That, at least, was true. Nearly everyone was in formation, and the crowd was quieting.
Of course, said Abe.
To my astonishment, he brushed a kiss over my forehead before stepping away.
I'm glad you're back.
Then, with a wink, he said to Dimitri,
looking forward to our chat.
Run, I said when they were gone. If you slip out now, maybe they won't notice. Go back to Siberia.
Actually, said Dimitri, I'm pretty sure Abe would notice. Don't worry, Rosa. I'm not afraid. I'll take whatever heat they give me over being with you. It's worth it.
You really are the bravest man I know, I told him. He smiled, his eyes falling on a small commotion at the room's entrance.
Looks like she's ready, he murmured.
I hope I am, I whispered back. In true grandiose fashion, a herald brought the room to attention. Perfect silence fell. You couldn't even hear breathing. The herald stepped back from the door.
Princess Vasilisa Sabina Rhea Dragomir.
Lyssa entered, and even though I'd seen her less than half an hour ago, I still caught my breath. She was wearing a formal gown but had once again dodged sleeves. No doubt the dressmaker had had a fit. The dress was floor-length, with a skirt of silk and chiffon layers that moved and fluttered around Lyssa as she strode forward. The fabric was the same jade as her eyes, as was the dress's top, with the halter collar covered in emeralds that gave the illusion of a necklace. Matching emeralds covered the dress's belt, and bracelets completed the display. Her hair was worn long, brushed out to gleaming platinum perfection, an aura unto itself. Christian walked beside her, a sharp contrast with his black hair and dark suit. Customs were being modified significantly today since a family member normally would have escorted Lyssa. But, well, she was kind of running out. Even I had to admit he looked amazing, and his pride and love for her shone on his face, no matter what troubled feeling stirred within him over Tasha. Lord Ozera, I remembered. I had a feeling that title would become more and more important now. He led Lyssa to the base of the throne and then joined the Ozera delegation in the crowd. Ekaterina made a small gesture to a large satin pillow on the floor in front of the steps.
Kneel.
There was the briefest hesitation on Lyssa's part, one I think only I noticed. Even without the bond, I was so attuned to her mood and tiniest actions that I could pick up on these things. Her eyes had gone to Jill. Lissa's expression didn't change, and it was so strange not to know her feelings. I could make some educated guesses. Uncertainty. Confusion. Again, the pause was only a moment long. Lissa knelt, artfully spreading her skirts around her as she did. Ekaterina had always seemed so frail and wizened in that testing room. But as she stood there with the ancient Moroi coronation book, I could sense a power still within the former queen. The book was in Romanian, but Ekaterina translated it effortlessly as she read aloud, beginning with a speech about what was expected of a monarch and then going to the vows Lissa had to swear to.
Will you serve? Will you protect your people? Will you be just?
There were 12 in all, and Lissa had to answer, I will, 3 times to each one, in English, in Russian, and in Romanian. Not having the bond to confirm her feelings was still so strange, but I could see on her face that she meant every word she said. When that part finished, Ekaterina cued Jill forward. Since I'd last noticed the girl, someone had given her the crown to hold. It had been custom-made for Lissa, a masterpiece of white and yellow gold intertwined with emeralds and diamonds. It complemented her outfit beautifully, and I noticed with a start, Jill did too. Another tradition was that the monarch was crowned by a family member, and this was what Jill had been saved for. I could see her hands tremble as she laid the bejeweled wonder on her sister's head, and their gazes met briefly. A flash of troubled emotion swirled in Lissa's eyes once more, gone quickly as Jill stepped back and the weight of the ceremony took precedence. Ekaterina held out her hand to Lissa.
Rise, she said. You will never kneel to anyone again.
Holding Lissa's hand, Ekaterina turned so that they both faced the rest of us in the room. With a voice startling for her small body, Ekaterina declared,
Queen Vasilisa Sabina Rhea Dragomir, first of her name.
Everyone in the room, except Ekaterina, dropped to their knees, heads bowed. Only a few seconds passed before Lissa said,
Rise.
I'd been told this was at the monarch's discretion. Some new kings and queens enjoyed making others kneel for a long time. Paperwork followed, which we all watched dutifully as well. Basically, it was Lissa signing to say she'd been made queen while Ekaterina and a couple witnesses signed that they'd seen Lissa made queen. 3 copies were on the ornate paper Moroi royalty so loved. One was plain white letterhead, which would go to the alchemists. When the signing was done, Lissa took her place on the throne, and seeing her ascend those stairs was breathtaking, an image that would stay with me for the rest of my life. The room broke out into cheers and clapping as she settled into the ornate chair. Even the guardians, who normally stayed so deadly serious, joined in the applause and celebration. Lissa smiled at everyone, hiding whatever anxiety she felt. She scanned the room, and her grin broadened when she saw Christian. She then sought me out. Her smile for him had been affectionate. Mine was a bit humorous. I smiled back, wondering what she would say to me if she could.
What's so funny?
Asked Dimitri, looking down at me with amusement. I'm just thinking about what Lissa would say if we still had the bond. In a very bad breach of guardian protocol, he caught a hold of my hand and pulled me toward him.
And?
He asked, wrapping me in an embrace. I think she'd ask, what have we gotten ourselves into?
What's the answer?
His warmth was all around me, as was his love, and again I felt that completeness. I had that missing piece of my world back. The soul that complemented mine. My match. My equal. Not only that, I had my life back. My own life. I would protect Lissa. I would serve. but I was finally my own person. I don't know, I said, leaning against his chest. But I think it's going to be good. This is Emily Schaefer. We hope that you've enjoyed this production of Vampire Academy, Book 6, Last Sacrifice, by Rochelle Mead. This program was executive produced by Patty Peruse and produced by Garrett Scott. Vampire Academy, Book 6, Last Sacrifice, is a production of Penguin Audio, a member of Penguin Group USA, Inc. Copyright 2010. All rights reserved. The book Last Sacrifice is available wherever Razorbill books are sold.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Audible.com and Penguin Young Readers Group present Shadow Kiss, Vampire Academy, Book 3. Written by Rochelle Mead and read by Christine Vam. Chapter 1. His fingertips slid along my back, applying hardly any pressure, yet sending shockwaves over my flesh. Slowly, slowly his hands moved across my skin, down the sides of my stomach to finally rest in the curves of my hips. Just below my ear, I felt his lips press against my neck, followed by another kiss just below it, then another. His lips moved from my neck toward my cheek, and then finally found my mouth. We kissed, wrapping ourselves closer together. My blood burned within me, and I felt more alive in that moment than I ever had. I loved him. Loved Christian so much that... Christian? Oh, no. Some coherent part of me immediately realized what was happening. And boy, was it pissed off. The rest of me, however, was still actually living in this encounter, experiencing it as though I was the one being touched and kissed. That part of me couldn't break away. I'd merged too much with Lyssa, and for all intents and purposes, this was happening to me. No, I told myself sternly. It's not real. Not for you. Get out of there. But how could I listen to logic when every nerve in my body was being set on fire? You aren't her. This isn't your head. Get out. His lips. There was nothing in the world right now except his lips. It's not him. Get out. The kisses were the same, exactly as I remembered with him. No, it's not. Dimitri, get out. Dimitri's name was like cold water hitting me in the face. I got out. I sat upright in my bed, suddenly feeling smothered. I tried kicking off the covers, but mostly ended up entangling my legs even more. My heart beat hard in my chest, and I tried to take deep breaths to steady myself and return to my own reality. Times sure had changed. A long time ago, Lyssa's nightmares used to wake me from sleep. Now her sex life did. To say the two were a little different would be an understatement. I'd actually gotten the hang of blocking out her romantic interludes, at least when I was awake. This time, Lyssa and Christian had, unintentionally, outsmarted me. In sleep, my defenses were down, allowing strong emotions to pass through the psychic link that connected me to my best friend. This wouldn't have been a problem if the two of them had been in bed like normal people. And by being in bed, I mean asleep. God, I muttered, sitting up and swinging my legs over the side of the bed. My voice was muffled in a yawn. Couldn't Lyssa and Christian have seriously kept their hands off each other until waking hours? Worse than being woken up, though, was the way I still felt. Sure, none of that making out had actually happened to me. It hadn't been my skin being touched or my lips being kissed. Yet my body seemed to feel the loss of it nonetheless. It had been a very long time since I'd been in that kind of situation. I ached and felt warm all over. It was idiotic, but suddenly, desperately, I wanted someone to touch me. Even just to hold me. But definitely not Christian. The memory of those lips on mine flashed back through my mind, how they'd felt, and how my sleepy self had been so certain it was Dimitri kissing me. I stood up on shaky legs, feeling restless and, well, sad. Sad and empty. Needing to walk off my weird mood, I put on a robe and slippers and left my room for the bathroom down the hall. I splashed cool water on my face and stared in the mirror. The reflection looking back at me had tangled hair and bloodshot eyes. I looked sleep-deprived, but I didn't want to go back to bed. I didn't want to risk falling asleep quite yet. I needed something to wake me up and shake away what I'd seen. I left the bathroom and turned toward the stairwell, my feet light on the steps as I went downstairs. The first floor of my dorm was still and quiet. It was almost noon, the middle of the night for vampires, since they ran on a nocturnal schedule. Lurking near the edge of a doorway, I scanned the lobby. It was empty, save for the yawning Maroi man sitting at the front desk. He leafed half-heartedly through a magazine, held to consciousness only by the finest of threads. He came to the magazine's end and yawned again. Turning in his revolving chair, he tossed the magazine on a table behind him and reached for what must have been something else to read. While his back was turned, I darted past him toward the set of double doors that opened outside. Praying the doors wouldn't squeak, I carefully opened one a crack, just enough to slip through. Once outside, I eased the door shut as gently as possible. No noise. At most, the guy would feel a draft. Feeling like a ninja, I stepped out into the light of day. Cold wind blasted me in the face, but it was exactly what I needed. Leafless tree branches swayed in the wind, clawing at the sides of the stone dorm like fingernails. The sun peeped at me from between lead-colored clouds, further reminding me that I should be in bed and asleep. Squinting at the light, I tugged my robe tighter and walked around the side of the building toward a spot between it and the gym that wasn't quite so exposed to the elements. The slush on the sidewalk soaked into the cloth of my slippers, but I didn't care. Yeah, it was a typically miserable winter day in Montana, but that was the point. The crisp air did a lot to wake me up and chase off the remnants of the virtual love scene. Plus, it kept me firmly in my own head. Focusing on the cold in my body was better than remembering what it had felt like to have Christian's hands on me. Standing there, staring off at a cluster of trees without really seeing them, I was surprised to feel a spark of anger at Lyssa and Christian. It must be nice, I thought bitterly, to do whatever the hell you wanted. Lyssa had often commented that she wished she could feel my mind and experiences the way I could feel hers. The truth was, she had no idea how lucky she was. She had no idea what it was like to have someone else's thoughts intruding on yours, someone else's experiences muddling yours. She didn't know what it was like to live with someone else's perfect love life when your own was non-existent. She didn't understand what it was like to be filled with a love so strong that it made your chest ache, a love you could only feel and not express. Keeping love buried was a lot like keeping anger pent up, I'd learned. It just ate you up inside until you wanted to scream or kick something. No, Lyssa didn't understand any of that. She didn't have to. She could carry on with her own romantic affairs with no regard for what she was doing to me. I noticed then that I was breathing heavily again, this time with rage. The icky feeling I'd felt over Lissa and Christian's late-night hookup was gone. It had been replaced by anger and jealousy, feelings born of what I couldn't have and what came so easily to her. I tried my best to swallow these emotions back. I didn't want to feel that way toward my best friend. "Are you sleepwalking?" a voice asked behind me. I spun around, startled. Dimitri stood there watching me, looking both amused and curious. It would figure that while I was raging over the problems in my unfair love life, the source of those problems would be the one to find me. I hadn't heard him approach at all. So much for my ninja skills. And honestly, would it have killed me to pick up a brush before I went outside? Hastily, I ran my hand through my long hair, knowing it was a little too late. It probably looked like an animal had died on the top of my head. "I was testing dorm security," I said. "It sucks." A hint of a smile played over his lips. The cold was really starting to seep into me now, and I couldn't help but notice how warm his long leather coat looked. I wouldn't have minded wrapping up in it. As though reading my mind, he said, "You must be freezing. Do you want my coat?" I shook my head, deciding not to mention that I couldn't feel my feet. "I'm fine. What are you doing out here? Are you testing security, too?" "I am security. This is my watch." Shifts of school guardians always patrolled the grounds while everyone else slept. Strigoi, the undead vampires who stalked living Moroi vampires like Lissa, didn't come out in sunlight. But students breaking rules, say like sneaking out of their dorms, were a problem night and day. "Well, good work," I said. "I'm glad I was able to help test your awesome skills. I should be going now."
"Rose."
Dimitri's hand caught my arm, and despite all the wind and chill and slush, a flash of heat shot through me. He released me with a start, as though he too had been burned.
"What are you really doing out here?"
He was using the "stop fooling around" voice, so I gave him as truthful an answer as I could. "I had a bad dream. I wanted some air."
"And so you just rushed out? Breaking the rules didn't even cross your mind, and neither did putting on a coat."
"Yeah," I said. "That pretty much sums it up."
"Rose, Rose."
This time, it was his exasperated voice. "You never change. Always jumping in without thinking." "That's not true," I protested. "I've changed a lot." The amusement on his face suddenly faded, his expression growing troubled. He studied me for several moments. Sometimes I felt as though those eyes could see right into my soul.
"You're right. You have changed."
He didn't seem very happy about the admission. He was probably thinking about what had happened almost 3 weeks ago, when some friends and I had gotten ourselves captured by Strigoi. It was only through sheer luck that we'd managed to escape. And not all of us had gotten out. Mason, a good friend and a guy who'd been crazy about me, had been killed, and part of me would never forgive myself for it, even though I'd killed his murderers. It had given me a darker outlook on life. Well, it had given everyone here at St. Vladimir's Academy a darker outlook, but me especially. Others had begun to notice the difference in me. I didn't like to see Dimitri concerned, though, so I played off his observation with a joke. "Well, don't worry. My birthday's coming up. As soon as I'm 18, I'll be an adult, right? I'm sure I'll wake up that morning and be all mature and stuff." As I hoped, his frown softened into a small smile.
"Yes, I'm sure. What is it? About a month?"
31 days, I announced primly.
"Not that you're counting."
I shrugged, and he laughed.
"I suppose you've made a birthday list, too, 10 pages, single-spaced, ranked by order of priority. The smile was still on his face. It was one of the relaxed, genuinely amused ones that were so rare to him. I started to make another joke, but the image of Lyssa and Christian flared into my mind again. That sad and empty feeling in my stomach returned. Anything I might have wanted, new clothes, an iPod, whatever, suddenly seemed trivial. What did material things like that mean compared to the one thing I wanted most of all? God, I really had changed. No, I said in a small voice. No list. He tilted his head to better look at me, making some of his shoulder-length hair blow in his face. His hair was brown, like mine, but not nearly as dark. Mine looked black at times. He brushed the unruly strands aside, only to have them immediately blown back in his face.
I can't believe you don't want anything. It's going to be a boring birthday.
Freedom, I thought. That was the only gift I longed for. Freedom to make my own choices. Freedom to love who I wanted. It doesn't matter, I said instead.
What do you...
He stopped. He understood. He always did. It was part of why we connected like we did. In spite of the 7-year gap in our ages, we'd fallen for each other last fall when he'd been my combat instructor. As things heated up between us, we'd found we had more things to worry about than just age. We were both going to be protecting Lyssa when she graduated, and we couldn't let our feelings for each other distract us when she was our priority. Of course, that was easier said than done, because I didn't think our feelings for each other were ever really going to go away. We'd both had moments of weakness, moments that led to stolen kisses or saying things we really shouldn't have. After I'd escaped the Strigoi, Dimitri had told me he loved me and had pretty much admitted he could never be with anyone else because of that. Yet, it had also become clear that we still couldn't be together either, and we had both slipped back into our old roles of keeping away from each other and pretending that our relationship was strictly professional. In a not-so-obvious attempt to change the subject, he said,
"You can deny it all you want, but I know you're freezing. Let's go inside. I'll take you in through the back."
I couldn't help feeling a little surprised. Dimitri was rarely one to avoid uncomfortable subjects. In fact, he was notorious for pushing me into conversations about topics I didn't want to deal with. But talking about our dysfunctional star-crossed relationship, that was a place he apparently didn't want to go today. Yeah, things were definitely changing. "I think you're the one who's cold," I teased, as we walked around the side of the dorm where novice guardians lived. "Shouldn't you be all tough and stuff, since you're from Siberia?"
"I don't think Siberia's exactly what you imagine."
"I imagine it as an Arctic wasteland," I said truthfully.
"Then it's definitely not what you imagine."
"Do you miss it?" I asked, glancing back to where he walked behind me. It was something I'd never considered before. In my mind, everyone would want to live in the U.S., or, well, they at least wouldn't want to live in Siberia.
"All the time," he said,
his voice a little wistful.
"Sometimes I wish..."
"Belikov!" A voice was carried on the wind from behind us. Dimitri muttered something and then shoved me further around the corner I'd just rounded. "Stay out of sight." I ducked down behind a bank of holly trees that flanked the building. They didn't have any berries, but the thick cluster of sharp, pointed leaves scratched where my skin was exposed. Considering the freezing temperature and the possible discovery of my late-night walk, a few scratches were the least of my problems right now.
"You're not on watch,"
I heard Dimitri say several moments later. "No, but I needed to talk to you." I recognized the voice. It belonged to Alberta, captain of the Academy's Guardians. "It'll just take a minute.
We need to shuffle some of the watches while you're at the trial.
I figured, he said.
There was a funny, almost uncomfortable note in his voice.
It's going to put a strain on everyone else. Bad timing.
Yes. Well, the Queen runs on her own schedule. Alberta sounded frustrated, and I tried to figure out what was going on. Celeste will take your watches, and she and Emile will divide up your training times. Training times? Dimitri wouldn't be conducting any training next week because... Ah, that was it, I realized. The field experience. Tomorrow kicked off 6 weeks of hands-on practice for us novices. We'd have no classes and would get to protect Maroi night and day while the adults tested us. The training times must be when Dimitri would be out participating in that. But what was this trial she'd mentioned? Did they mean like the final trials we had to undergo at the end of the school year? They say they don't mind the extra work, continued Alberta. But I was wondering if you could even things out and take some of their shifts before you leave?
Absolutely, he said, words still short and stiff.
Thanks. I think that'll help, she sighed. I wish I knew how long this trial was going to be. I don't want to be away that long. You'd think it'd be a done deal with Dashkov, but now I hear the Queen's getting cold feet about imprisoning a major royal. I stiffened. The chill running through me now had nothing to do with the winter day. Dashkov?
I'm sure they'll do the right thing, said Dimitri.
I realized at that moment why he wasn't saying much. This wasn't something I was supposed to hear. I hope so, and I hope it'll only take a few days, like they claim. Look, it's miserable out here. Would you mind coming into the office for a second to look at the schedule?
Sure,
he said.
Let me check on something first.
All right. See you soon. Silence fell, and I had to assume Alberta was walking away. Sure enough, Dimitri rounded the corner and stood in front of the holly. I shot up from my hiding spot. The look on his face told me he already knew what was coming.
Rose?
Dashkov? I exclaimed, trying to keep my voice low so Alberta wouldn't hear. As in Victor Dashkov?
He didn't bother denying it.
Yes, Victor Dashkov. And you guys were talking about... Do you mean...
I was so startled, so dumbstruck, that I could barely get my thoughts together. This was unbelievable.
I thought he was locked up. Are you saying he hasn't been on trial yet?
Yes, this was definitely unbelievable.
Victor Dashkov, the guy who'd stalked Lyssa and tortured her mind and body in order to control her powers. Every Maroi could use magic in one of the four elements. Earth, air, water, or fire. Lyssa, however, worked an almost unheard-of fifth element called spirit. She could heal anything, including the dead. It was the reason I was now physically linked to her. Shadow-kissed, some called it. She'd brought me back from the car accident that had killed her parents and brother, binding us together in a way that allowed me to feel her thoughts and experiences. Victor had learned long before any of us that she could heal, and he'd wanted to lock her away and use her as his own personal fountain of youth. He also hadn't hesitated to kill anyone who got in his way, or, in the case of Dimitri and me, use more creative ways to stop his opponents. I'd made a lot of enemies in 17 years, but I was pretty sure there was no one I hated as much as Victor Dashkov, at least among the living. Dimitri had a look on his face I knew well. It was the one he got when he thought I might punch someone.
He's been locked up, but no trial yet. Legal proceedings sometimes take a long time.
But there's going to be a trial now, and you're going. I spoke through clenched teeth, trying to be calm. I suspected I still had the I'm going to punch someone look on my face.
Next week. They need me and some of the other guardians to testify about what happened to you and Lyssa that night.
His expression changed at the mention of what had occurred 4 months ago, and again, I recognized the look. It was the fierce, protective one he got when those he cared about were in danger.
Call me crazy for asking this, but, are Lyssa and I going with you?
I had already guessed the answer, and I didn't like it.
No.
No?
No.
I put my hands on my hips. Look, doesn't it seem reasonable that if you're going to talk about what happened to us, then you should have us there?
Dimitri, fully in strict instructor mode now, shook his head.
The Queen and some of the other Guardians thought it'd be best if you didn't go. There's enough evidence between the rest of us, and besides, criminal or not, he is, or was, one of the most powerful royals in the world. Those who know about this trial want to keep it quiet.
So what? You thought if you brought us, we'd tell everyone? I exclaimed. Come on, comrade. You really think we'd do that? The only thing we want to see is Victor locked up. Forever. Maybe longer. And if there's a chance he might walk free, you have to let us go.
After Victor had been caught, he'd been taken to prison, and I'd thought that was where the story had ended. I'd figured they'd lock him up to rot. It never occurred to me, though it should have, that he'd need a trial first. At the time, his crimes had seemed so obvious. But although the Moroi government was secret and separate from the human one, it operated in a lot of the same ways. Due process and all that.
It's not my decision to make, Dimitri said.
But you have influence. You could speak up for us, especially if...
Some of my anger dimmed just a little, replaced by a sudden and startling fear. I almost couldn't say the next words.
Especially if there really is a chance he might get off. Is there? Is there really a chance the Queen could let him go?
I don't know. There's no telling what she or some of the other high-up royals will do sometimes.
He suddenly looked tired. He reached into his pocket and tossed over a set of keys.
Look, I know you're upset, but we can't talk about it now. I have to go meet Alberta, and you need to get inside. The square key will let you in the far side door. You know the one.
I did. Yeah, thanks. I was sulking, and hated to be that way, especially since he was saving me from getting in trouble. But I couldn't help it. Victor Dashkov was a criminal. A villain, even. He was power-hungry and greedy, and didn't care who he stepped on to get his way. If he were loose again, well, there was no telling what might happen to Lyssa, or any other Moroi. It enraged me to think that I could do something to help put him away, but that no one would let me do it. I'd taken a few steps forward when Dimitri called out from behind me.
Rose.
I glanced back.
I'm sorry, he said.
He paused and his expression of regret turned wary.
And you'd better bring the keys back tomorrow.
I turned away and kept going. It was probably unfair, but some childish part of me believed Dimitri could do anything. If he'd really wanted to get Lyssa and me to the trial, I was certain he could have. When I was almost to the side door, I caught movement in my peripheral vision. My mood plummeted. Great. Dimitri had given me keys to sneak back in, and now someone else had busted me. That was typical of my luck. Half expecting a teacher to demand to know what I was doing, I turned and prepared an excuse. But it wasn't a teacher.
No,
I said softly. This had to be a trick.
No.
For half an instant, I wondered if I'd really woken up. Maybe I was actually still in bed, asleep and dreaming. Because surely, surely that was the only explanation for what I was now seeing in front of me on the Academy's lawn, lurking in the shadow of an ancient, gnarled oak. It was Mason. Chapter 2. Well, it looked like Mason. He, or it, or whatever, was hard to see. I had to keep squinting and blinking to get him in focus. His form was insubstantial, almost translucent.